Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
No tariff talk.
Hang in there. Don't go anywhere.
No tariff talk for the next 25 minutes, 24 and a half minutes, I think.
It's because we did such a good job in the last segment that we noticed we've exhausted. We did everything. We emptied ourselves.
There's nothing else to be said.
That's right. We explained it.
We explained it. Sort of.
All right. So joining us in studio is Steve Paisley Jordahl.
Morning, everybody.
Wesley's with me, raised in Kansas City. We're in Tupelo. I'm Tim.
I'm present. I mean, I'm in the room.
Now, when we had 25 minutes of tariff talk right there, people, that you missed from 10:30 to 11, and you need to go back and listen to it if you want to educate yourself. But I'm in the studio here with Wesley Ray, and Wesley's body language began to change throughout the half hour that we were talking about tariffs. At first, he was leaning up and engaged.
I noticed that. Seemed to be drifting.
But then after 15 minutes of Neil talking there, Wesley slumped down.
I had one question. He answered in the first 5 minutes, and then I was
after
out.
That, you lost interest.
That's true.
You started slumping in your chair. I was going to tell you, you're going to hurt your back doing that. But anyway,
all right.
So there you go. It's just like college, right? You have to take some classes you have no interest in. That's in order right. to graduate.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we need to learn things. And in all seriousness, I know we're joking about this. So this is a big deal.
Right. Yep.
And it's going to intensify. In other words, there's going to be some people getting upset and angry in the next few weeks or months that are being directly impacted by this.
So therefore, it's important that we get all the facts, even if we don't agree.
That's right.
We need to make sure that we understand the loan.
Right. I wanted people to understand what the motivation was.
A long-term motivation
for President Trump,
right? Yep.
Because my guess is, I know if I survey people who voted for President Trump, tariffs, worldwide tariffs, wasn't the top five issue for them. You know what I'm saying?
Probably not in the top 20 issues.
I know
voters,
but for President Trump, it's been a burr in his saddle for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and so he's. He's trying to rectify the trading imbalance, if that's what you want to call it.
Okay, right. during the break, Tim, I was thinking about this.
Yeah.
Steve, this is my summary of the last segment.
All right, okay? I'm listening.
In one sentence, tariffs are like castor oil for the economy, okay?
They taste oil. Terrible going down, but they're good.
That's
for
right,
you?
But they do some good eventually, right?
Yeah.
Well,
that's kind of what he was saying, you know.
It
short term it's tough, but in the long term it'll do you some good. We hope.
It didn't do Canada any good. I want to tie a bow on the Canada. I know you guys talked about it plenty, but I do want to tie a little bit of a bow because I've got something that makes me a little upset, just a little bit. First of all, though, I do want to play. You mentioned tariffs. Dr. Charles McVitie, who's a Canadian pro-family expert, we talked to him about Canadian stuff, and I talked to him earlier this morning and got his thoughts about the election, and this is what he had to say, cut 12.
It's a complete disaster. It's more disastrous than a straight liberal victory because they have a minority government, but the NDP, the socialists, the communists, will be the balance of power with just a handful of seats. So the outcome could not have been worse last night. Donald Trump, with extreme tariffs, has threatened Canada's way of life. And if all the tariffs get put in place, we could see unemployment at 20 or 30%. We could see our economy crash to levels that we've never seen. And people were afraid of that. And so they voted for the person who they felt would deal with Donald Trump the best.
So we have often talked about Donald Trump and his tweets and all the stuff he does that kind of bug us, the personal insults that he seems to think are thrown at him and he throws back, right? We talked a lot about that. Well, it's never really come to much. It's just him talking, and it diminishes his popularity. But I have a feeling what you're going to hear next, his little fit might have been the reason for this election, cut 13.
Isn't that going to make them more hostile to us and possibly
open the door? No, I'd rather deal with a liberal than a conservative.
For China, closer to Canada, and that would really put us in a bind.
The conservative that's running is stupidly no friend of mine. I don't know him, but he said negative things. So when he says negative things, I couldn't care less. I think it's easier to deal actually with a liberal.
No, he's talking about Canada.
He's talking about actually endorsing Carney. He would rather run against Carney, but he said that Pierre Poilievre doesn't like him for some reason, is what his words.
We talked about that in the show prep meeting this morning, I don't recall what he said that made Trump so upset.
Well, I think all of Canada's ticked off at President Trump right now, right? Don't you get that sense?
Mr. Trump didn't help out the situation by repeating this 51st state thing.
Yeah.
As you said, Tim, it sounded like a joke, a throwaway line.
Yeah.
But if you repeat something 2 or 3 dozen times, people start thinking maybe he means it.
McVitie said it didn't have anything to do with the 51st state. That Canadians joke all the time about being U.S.'s 51st state. It was the tariffs. Yeah. It's according to McVitie.
Yeah. Now, what about the... We said we weren't going to do this. Here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go.
We just can't get enough tariffs. It's like sugar.
I can move on if you want.
You get addicted to it. Next story.
All right. We have been told by the abortion industry that the drugs that they give women to do chemical abortions are safe, just as safe as aspirin, they say. There's a 1 in 200 chance of an adverse effect, they say. So go ahead and kill your baby with an pill instead of coming in for a surgery. Well, the Ethics and Public Policy Center has released a report that found it's not 1 in 200. It's 1 in 10 women who have a serious adverse complication event after taking mifepristone. Sepsis, infections, needing a transfusion, hemorrhaging, hospitalization, ER, ectopic pregnancy, all of those things are adverse events because of this pill.
Do you get that pill just at the drugstore? Do you have to have a doctor's prescription for that?
They're fighting to make it OTC, over the counter. Right now, there are plenty of doctors you can do a visit with and get it. So basically,
it's prescription, but it's easy to get.
And it's actually two different medications combined, and it does change, but it does vary from state to state.
Okay. This is hard to talk about, but I got to ask this question anyway. And I want to tell folks it's not appropriate for children to listen to what I'm about to ask you. So I'm giving you a warning here. And maybe you don't know the answer to this, Steve. A woman finds out she's pregnant.
Yep.
And you can take a pill that aborts the causes the baby to, what happens then?
Well, like Wesley said, it's a cocktail. It's two pills, mifepristone and mifepristec X. I'm not pronouncing this.
But what happens to the baby?
Well, the baby dies.
I know, but what is it? How does it? This is the gross part to talk about, but what is it?
Well, the first pill basically starves the baby. It kills the baby in the placenta, in the womb. By poison.
So this is under 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Or under.
Well, it's supposed to be under 6 weeks, but Planned Parenthood, they don't really care about that. But the second pill then is what causes the contractions and has the mom deliver the dead baby.
But this isn't so much Planned Parenthood as it is, it's the individual woman taking the pill.
Right.
The woman has to put the pill down her throat, wherever she gets it, and that aborts the baby in a way that's hard to even talk about, right?
Yeah. I mean, now, there are pro-life centers have a medication that can reverse the first pill. Mm-hmm. If you get it soon enough, it'll keep the baby from dying.
But 6 weeks, if it's 6 weeks, that's when the heartbeat starts.
That is when the heartbeat starts.
So anyway, what was the point of the story in the begin with? I'm sorry to get in.
That's okay. The complication rate, the adverse events rate from the first pill is 22 times higher than they were previously reported.
That's the point of the story.
It's almost 11% of women who take that first pill will have an adverse effect.
It's dangerous.
It's very dangerous drug.
Well, you're doing something unnatural.
That's right.
It goes against the laws God has created. And if you take the life of a growing baby, and it's going to, the sin is going to catch up with you.
That's right. Yep.
One way or another, mentally, physically, emotionally, and certainly spiritually. And how many testimonies, Ray, have we heard over the decades? And many, many women listening to us right now, maybe who had an abortion back in the 70s or 80s, and they, you know, have a lifelong regret. You know, I mean, this action doesn't happen in a vacuum. Go ahead.
It's going to touch the heart, the soul, the mind, the body, because we're all one thing. It's not as if the body is one part, the mind is another. We are whole human beings. And so when you do something as antithetical to human nature as to kill the unborn baby growing in your body,
right,
you cannot do that without suffering enormous pain, regret, guilt, and it's going to show up. You know, Tim, it doesn't show up the same way with every woman. Not every woman experiences it the same way. But it is not possible to kill your own unborn child and not feel and not face some consequences in your own heart and soul, if nothing more than simply the hardening of your heart against the Lord.
Yeah, and that's what you see when you see these women that brag about having their abortion. Their conscience has been seared and hardened against God.
That's right. Next story.
Want some good news?
Yes.
All right. The Department of Education, its Office for Civil Rights. Now, we have a new sheriff in town, so all of the federal agencies now are run by Donald Trump and his administration, and they're all changing priorities. Well, the Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights, which had been trying its hardest to make sure that men or boys could compete in girls' sports, now has ruled that the University of Pennsylvania violated Title IX by allowing William Thomas, who swam as Leah, to compete in the women's swimming on the women's swimming team in 2022. This is what the department is demanding from the Penn. Issue a statement to the university community stating that the university will comply with Title IX in all of its athletic programs. This is key. Restore to all female athletes all individual athletic records, titles, honors, awards, or similar recognition for Division I swimming competitions misappropriated by male athletes competing in female categories. And then third, send a letter to each of those female athletes whose individual recognition is restored and apologize to them.
So that's what's being considered or will happen?
That is the Department of Education has ruled. This is what they have said. It's a ruling by their Civil Rights Division.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this is in line with President Trump's executive order early on in his administration that says the federal government will only recognize two genders.
And while this didn't happen under his watch, I'm grateful that his administration and his team is doing something about this and not just making rules in place, but they're also going back and trying to fix what, even though they weren't responsible for it, they're going back and trying to make things right.
Yep. That's how Riley Gaines got her start. You remember her?
You mean her start in public policy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she was the swimmer that this dude beat.
One of them.
And Riley Gaines was an All-American swimmer at the University of Kentucky. She lives in Nashville now. She's been on our program a couple times, and she's on Fox News regularly. But she is championing, you know, the keeping girls sports.
For girls.
For girls, yeah.
That simple.
And so that's how she got her start, was against this guy at the University of Pennsylvania. And this anyway, all right, that's good news.
We talked with Paul Scanlon, who was William, his teammate at the Pennsylvania, and it was really bad. This is what he had to say. She had to say. Paul Scanlon, cut 8.
Okay, let's talk really quickly about this headline from today. In case you missed the headline, the University of Pennsylvania was found to have violated Title IX by the Department of Education. I feel uniquely qualified to talk about this because I was a member of the University of Pennsylvania women's swim team. And let me just say really quickly, I don't think the University of Pennsylvania is going to apologize to anyone. And I honestly don't think that they are sorry for what they did to us female athletes. I could go on for years about what they did to all of us female athletes competing in swimming that season. I'm just going to give you a few examples. First, the University of Pennsylvania nominated Leah Thomas for NCAA Woman of the Year. The school gets only a few nominees, and they chose Leah Thomas. They also told all of us female athletes that we needed to seek psychological services if we objected to him undressing in our locker room 18 times per week. They gave us the number for an on-campus counselor. The last thing they did is they continued to highlight Thomas's achievements all over social media, and they also would sell out the stands of our swim meets to media so that they could take pictures of us in our swimsuits. That is not a university simply following the NCAA rules. That is a university that stands by what they did and stands by thinking men belong on women's sports teams.
She's talking about the University of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And there's as of yesterday, there's no comment by Penn State. So
not Penn State.
No.
University of Pennsylvania.
Scanlon swims as fast as
I'm sorry, University of Pennsylvania.
Yeah. There's a lot of kind of Penn State fans right now.
Yeah, they're like, whoa, no.
We're not in this. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
It ain't us.
Yeah.
So, anyway, it's good to hear from her. That young lady right there you just heard from, she was forced to participate with him.
Share a locker room with him.
Yeah.
I'm reading more here on ESPN that says the department said that Penn, not Penn State, has 10 days to voluntarily resolve the violations or they will risk prosecution.
Yeah. Well, good for the Department of Education. And of course, that's President Trump's initiative right there. So next story, Steve.
Well, it's kind of related. We talked about the Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights, but the Justice Department's Office for Civil Rights, which is kind of oversees all the civil rights in America. This was the office that Biden and Obama just stuffed full of woke, angry lawyers who had nothing better to do than to crack down on police forces than to try to prosecute pro-life people who would stand and pray or protest at clinics. Well, a new sheriff in town, and we find out that more than 100 attorneys in that division have already said they will leave their jobs. This is according to Harmeet Dhillon. Harmeet Dhillon, who is the civil rights director there. And she says the old bad people are leaving because they don't like the change. This is what they're going to focus on. They're going to focus on combating anti-Semitism, anti-Christian bias, and the participation of transgender athletes in women's sports and what Trump allies have described as woke ideology. That's what our civil rights division is going to be doing.
So it sounds to me like they're going to help us get back to following the Constitution.
Yeah.
The First Amendment.
Yeah. I mean, it's the definition of, I mean, no one was paying attention to Paula Scanlon or anybody's civil rights when they were being beaten by this guy. They don't, you know, sure. So.
Well, that's a good thing.
It is a good thing.
So that's two good things in a matter of 60 seconds.
Yeah.
Good news, Steve.
Yep, that's me.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. If you live in California and have
bad insurance
there, this might come as a little bit of it. This is a guy that called his medical, his insurance company and wanted to know why his bill was so expensive. And I'll just let him explain it. Cut 7.
How can I help you? So I think there's a mistake on the bill, but maybe you could help me out. We got a bill, and then we realized that you guys didn't have our insurance, so we sent you the insurance, and it looks like the bill went up. The first bill we got without the insurance was $600, and then the second one was almost $1,300.
Okay. Yeah, so that the first invoice you received, that's a discount that you receive if you're uninsured. So you're not eligible for the discount since you are insured.
Can I go back to the discount without the insurance?
No, so you're insured, so you're not eligible for the discount.
If I go cancel my insurance, am I eligible for the discount?
No, sir, because we checked eligibility and you do have active coverage for data service.
Oh, I needed to cancel it before I got the service to get the discount. So I'll get cheaper health care if I'm uninsured.
If you're uninsured, you're eligible for the discount, correct?
I pay for insurance and I end up paying more out of pocket because I pay for a premium. That's wild.
Yeah.
That's California for you.
Wow. That's not a skit. That's a real person in the real state of California.
Well, is any more to that story?
No, that's just it's a real bill in California, and it's one of the examples of the California under Governor Newsom, who is pretending to be a more conservative, or at least he's pretending to run to the center, hoping to improve his stock with moderate Democrats and. That he can fool the country.
There are moderate Democrats.
Well, there are a lot of Democrats that don't like where their party's gone.
Well, all right. So that was crazy. Listen to that. So the guy who was responding to the fellow calling in, who was that? An insurance company? An insurance company representative.
Was that
a hospital?
No, it was an insurance company representative.
Just to recap, they had misbilled him, which happens,
right?
You know,
right.
And he said he was calling in hopes that if he sent in his insurance, that his bill would go down,
right?
He sent his insurance in and it doubled. That's our system in many cases. In many cases, our system in America incentivizes bad behavior. It incentivizes to not have insurance.
Well, those of us who do have insurance have to pay for the people who don't.
And there's no consequences for not having it.
that's his point. He said, I'm better off not having insurance.
I'll give you my quick story on the no insurance situation.
You got 30 seconds. Go.
The car insurance, we got hit here in Tupelo. My wife did in her van, and we got out, and the guy that hit us, he looked like he was in bad shape. His car was in bad shape. I felt bad for him, so we wrote up a police report, and he said, you know, I'll get back with you, blah, blah, blah. Come to find out, he drove off, didn't have insurance, and my insurance had to cover his or cover mine, and he didn't care about it. But he had no insurance. There was no consequence. Didn't get it.
Well, now you're supposed to, the police officer is supposed to
write him a.
If he doesn't have insurance, that's a violation of state law. But
and he did not.
Well, I don't know why that didn't happen. All right, thank you, Wesley. Thank you, Steve.
Pleasure.
Ray.
Thank you, Tim.
I want to thank Chris Woodward and Neil Mammon who brought the tariff talk today, folks. You got
it. He brought it.
Let's give it up for Neil. Huh? Neil Mammon. That was wonderful. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Take care.